Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Hey, Adam, the other day I did a guest spot on a different podcast.
Let me smell your mic. How dare you?
I was asked by our friends Andrew Walsh and Genevieve Haz to go on their show after these messages and talk about television commercials, which is the topic of their podcast, but television commercials specifically with Star Trek references.
Huh. You've been on that show before. You've been given your five guest appearance sash by now.
Uh-huh.
You're a regular, and I know those guys in real life. How are they doing?
They're doing good, and I had a ton of fun. I brought it up because I'm trying to get better about when I do a guest spot, mentioning it on here, because I think our listeners would enjoy it.
I've felt the same way. I'm a terrible self-marketer. It's one of the reasons I was not a great freelancer.
Yeah.
And we have many places that keep track of our shows and whatnot. I kind of want to pin something to the top of the Reddit or whatever that just lists all the guest spots.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I feel like between the two of us, we have dozens. Is that an accurate number?
Yeah, I would guess that there are at least a dozen.
That's big fun.
Yeah.
So if you're not sick of the sound of our voices, there's more.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
There's more to be had. If you've this never happens to me, but if you get to the bottom of your podcast player and the cupboard is bare, I'm always way behind on podcasts.
I've never had an empty email inbox, and I've never had an empty podcast subscription list.
Yeah, and like most of the podcasts in my playlist are now just spam, it seems like. You know, you donate to one political candidate and somehow the word gets out that you're an easy mark, and then every podcast is coming for you.
Boy, yeah. I think most of the email I've been getting lately has been like urgent, urgent, urgent. We just need five more dollars.
I feel
like I'm giving them an allowance. Like, now this is your last $5.
Right. Yeah. Can we just set up an eel where I pay like $10 a month not to have emails come like that? Yeah. Where it says like devastating loss in.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you need in a subject line is devastating loss, and you've got my click.
Right. I'm slavering to see what you have to say in the body of your email.
I want to talk to you about, this probably isn't good for the show, but you changing your email address seemed like a very significant deal, one that I haven't even considered.
I've been on Gmail since it was hard to get on Gmail.
Yeah.
There was those early days where you had to like know somebody that had invites, and
that's why
everybody got like two.
For the longest time, you were ben@gmail.com, one of the great email addresses.
But I switched to this
paid email service. You have to give them money to use it. So I'm hoping that that means that they are not mining my data for all it's worth. Like, part of this is a de-Googleization project, and part of it is a like trying to control the inbox thing, because everything that comes in from a new sender, you get to pick whether it goes in your inbox or in like a inbox that's just for receipts, or in one that's called the feed, and you kind of scroll through that like a social media app, and it doesn't actually like count any of those as unread or read at all.
That's funny. It keeps score differently.
Yeah, which has really bitten us in the ass recently, switching websites that keep score differently. But
no kidding. Yeah,
we should actually address that, because I guess we talked on the show about the fact that the statistics for The Greatest Generation are significantly different now than they were before, and a lot of people kindly wrote in and, you know, asked on social media and stuff what they could do to help.
People are so nice.
I know. Like, I think we tossed those mentions off, not anticipating that people would be concerned about it. We don't really know if there's an answer to that, I think, is the answer, right? Like,
my baseline answer to someone asking if there's a way to help is always, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do to help me.
That's just a reflex of yours.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, like, it's some industry standard that we had not uptaken with our old host, but in transitioning, we are now complying with this industry standard that unfortunately is very advertiser friendly and assumes that a lot of the downloads we get don't actually translate to people listening to the show.
We've asked to observe the downloads and subscriptions personally, and so far our host is not allowing us access.
Yeah, it's been,
to where
they make us stand back 6 feet, and it's very unfair.
It's a debacle.
Yeah, it shouldn't materially change anything for listeners, and I would say that the only real way to help is to, if everyone listening convinces one other person to listen, we'll be back to gold.
And they tell two friends, and they tell their friends, and so on, and so on, and so on.
We're not in any trouble that I know about. My message to the viewer is to just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And share the quote-unquote joy, if you like what's happening here. Share it with a friend. Yeah.
What was that you were saying about not being that good at self-marketing? I don't buy it for a second, Adam.
I'm editing this episode. I'm going to make that appeal sound great. Friends of DeSoto, 2020 has been hard on people. It can seem that to just get by, our expectations can't be lowered enough. That's why I'm here to tell you, what you're doing is enough. What you're not doing, well, that's fine. Every week, Ben and I make The Greatest Generation to make each other laugh. It was the goal back when we started, when no one watched or cared, and it's the same goal now that we have viewers like you who care a lot. So keep doing what you're doing, and don't worry about us. Ben and I will be fine. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you don't like the show, keep it to yourself.
Well, Adam, do you want to get into the episode that we came here to talk about today?
It is my understanding that this is the first of 10 parts. This is a 10-part season finale, right?
Wow.
So this is the first part of a 10-hour, 9-part series finale. It's called the final chapter, this package.
Oh, because like the last episode's probably a double.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
So that's what we're starting today.
Fuck. Man, we should have like thought of something momentous to do at the top of the show instead of just banter for 5 minutes.
No, I mean, I think what we're doing is we're going to make sure starting today that the next 9 episodes are contiguous and they fit together perfectly.
Right, we don't forget anything.
We're making a mortise in this episode and a tenon in the other, and so forth. as we begin with Deep Space Nine, Season 7, Episode 17, Penumbra.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
There are only a certain penumbra of episodes left.
Ooh, you suck!
Penumbra is one of my favorite filmmaking words.
Yeah?
Because you get every shadow has an umbra and a penumbra, and that's important in lighting. The umbra is the really dark part, and the penumbra is that transitional part of the shadow where it goes to light, and you want like nice penumbra on the face, for example, because that gives you definition.
That is a term I was not familiar with.
I think I came into familiarity with it PAing on a music video where the director was working with a lighting scheme where there were like two different color key lights on every subject, and so like the penumbras would have these like interesting color effects because the fall off would be like where those two colors of light mixed.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So, not sure how it factors into this episode, but maybe as we talk it through, we'll figure it out.
I hope so. At this point, it is a real mystery.
Yeah. We open on a beautiful shot of probably like Mount Diablo in Northern California. This looks exactly like where I went to high school.
Really?
But it's actually a province in Bajor that Ben Sisko has bought a big tract of land in. He's showing off his new timeshare acquisition to Cassidy Yates.
There's so much about this scene that made me bristle and prepare for an argument to come. An argument that that did not occur, which is like Sisko showing Cassidy his vacation slides, like, and Cassidy being not jealous or upset about how he's spending his free time.
You're serious?
Yeah, you went on a work trip and then spent a bunch of other time also just hanging out and having fun, and I wasn't even invited?
Also, Ben Sisko buries the lead in the halfway point in the episode. He's making all these future plans about how he wants to live the rest of his life. He's not being super clear that he wants to do that with Cassidy, and anytime you're in a relationship and you're talking about things you're going to do in front of them.
Right.
While not consulting or considering them in those things, that is a flammable situation.
Right. I thought a lot about that. I also thought about the idea that, I mean, Cassidy is human and presumably a Federation person. So what if he had said, I just bought all this land, and she'd like blown chunks right there. Just like, what? Bought? Land? You own it? Oh, what is wrong with you?
It's weird. It's a strange thing to do in a utopian future. Also, what does Sisko know/predict about the war at this point? Because this feels like buying land in Vietnam in 1973. Like, I'm sure he got a great deal on it, but that land is the tip of the sword.
Yeah. There's that adage, when there's blood in the streets, buy land. But
is that an adage?
Because like that's when the values of property will be the lowest. I mean, only sick fucks use that adage.
Yeah, what an awful thing to say, Ben.
I didn't come up with it, Adam. I've just heard it in movies and things.
I mean, I didn't put it together earlier when we were naming our LLC, and one of the options was Blood in the Streets LLC. I mean, sounded a little strange to me at the time. I'm glad we chose Uxbridge Shimoda.
Quote, attributed to Baron Rothschild, an 18th century British nobleman and member of the Rothschild banking family.
Who run everything in the world, including the newspapers.
Setting aside the idea of Ben Sisko pouring the contents of a gasoline canister over his head and on his body.
And then handing Cassidy a match and inviting her to marry him or set him alight.
Yeah, I mean, I also took note of the smiling picture that I guess he took from Earth of his mother and his father, of Sarah and his father.
Yeah.
That picture makes him fortunate he wasn't a target for that sniper, right? The smile sniper of a couple episodes ago?
Oh, yeah. Shoot.
How much more intense would that episode have been had Sisko been a target?
Yeah, one thing I don't remember if we talked about it all or not was whether there was like a rank issue there. Was the sniper only killing people of equal rank or lower than
him?
I
don't know.
Yeah, this and the recent Section 31 discussion we had, like, both lead me to believe that there is a certain overconfidence in the Federation that this war is basically cruising to a finish.
The war is going very badly for the Federation, far worse than is generally known.
Do we have any evidence to support that from the last handful of episodes? I don't feel like we do.
No, I don't either. I don't know where they get this confidence.
I tell you what, the next scene goes pretty far in establishing what the recent score is anyway, because in the Replimat, O'Brien, Bashir, and Ezri are just hanging out, gossiping, yeah, spilling some tea about Captain Baudet when Kira arrives with the bad news. The bad news being that the Rotoran and another Klingon ship that was with it was lost in the field.
And among the hands that were not recovered from the other ship, Commander Worf.
Personally, I don't know what Jadzia ever saw in the man.
Kira's like, this is going to be awkward, but should someone tell his brother, or...
I received a message via subspace about a person I don't remember.
I apologize for having to do this, but I believe I received your email in error.
Return to sender.
Yeah, they should not have bothered Kern with this, but the news of Worf's death kind of hits them like a ton of bricks, and it's a bunch of Worf is dead eyes to theme.
Yeah, people deal with grief in different ways. For Ezri, I think her reaction is going to become the most interesting of anyone's. Like, she and Worf have had a complicated relationship, that's putting it mildly. She goes right to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a good spot for her to be at this point, where Quark chats her up about if she's heard anything.
Yeah.
The tough part when you're a Starfleet in wartime is you just can't... These things are out of your hands. You can't just go out there. That'd be foolish.
There's a chain of command issue. They're trying to find Worf, but it's just the little D on search party. I thought that was... It's like one of the rare times where Sisko is suddenly off the station... Mm-hmm. And that all happened off camera. Like, yeah, the little D, like, going, like riding off into battle was something that we find out about later.
Yeah.
I like that.
Kern's out there driving around like someone who can't remember where he's going.
It took me a week to find my keys. And then when I finally got into my shuttle, I forgot where I was going to begin with.
I swear I've parallel parked 1,000 times, but I cannot remember. Do you pull up to the front door or the rear door of the car in front of the spot you want?
Quark is pretty even-keeled about the circumstance. He believes that Worf would never go and die while leaving an open bar tab, because you can't get into Stovacor with an open bar tab. You got to reconcile that before dying. And this makes Ezri feel a lot better.
Thanks, Quark.
Is this just, like, magical thinking on Quark's behalf? Like, why? Like, I can't imagine thinking that this is a good idea. Like, somebody has, like, very good reason to believe that somebody that's really important to them has died. And going, like, hey, I bet he's not dead. Don't worry about it.
I bet he's not dead because something, something, something about me. Yeah.
Give me a fucking break, Quark. What?
I think it's Ezri that softens that idea, though. Like, she accepts this with some aplomb.
Yeah. She is she's a much more eloquent person than he is. But she gets woken up in the middle of the night by a FaceTime from Sisko, who is out on patrol. And he says, like, basically, we've got to give up the search because there's a lot of enemy activity in the area. We're not really equipped to fend everybody off. You know, we wish we didn't have to do this, but we don't really have a choice.
I don't like this decision by Sisko. And by that, I mean not suspending the search. I mean waking up a clearly grieving person in the middle of the night to give them a bit of sad information that could have waited for the morning. Let her sleep, right. Ben Sisko. What the fuck?
Let her get her 8 hours. Jesus.
Yeah.
On Cardassia Prime, We catch up with Wayun and Damar having one of their customarily icy command meetings where they talk about troop movements and whatnot. Of course, Damar would like to press the attack and kill the little D, but Wayun needs the ships that would be used for that to protect the re-up. They have a new Ketracel facility somewhere, and unfortunately for the A-Quad Jem'Hadar, the Federation is aware of the location of this re-up.
They begin to argue a little bit about like the relative value they place on life in this scene.
If you have something to say, Damar, say it.
Because, you know, the Jem'Hadar hatched in a bog, like so many cranberries or whatever. And other people are born. People like Cardassians are born.
Well, and Damar rose to power on a drain the bog message that, you know, a lot of people would argue that he's, in fact, filled the bog even more.
It's so interesting how that informs strategy, though, because, like, if you are someone like Wayun, who has a picture of relative living value that looks like bog people, then I think you fail to recognize the strategic importance of, like, it's like a chess player if they assign pawn value to every piece on the board instead of, like, rightly recognizing that there are power pieces there that are of more value, you know? And, yeah. And it's a conversation like this that made me think of that. It's like they're talking about life and death, but they could also be arguing about strategy.
Right. And I think that it kind of comes into relief when Damar starts talking shit about Change Leader. Like, he's angry that they've turned the thermostat down in the room. And what it really boils down to is that Wayun treats Change Leader as a god, and Damar does not buy any of that shit.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, that cuts against the point I was making, because while Wayun treats the Jem'Hadar as valueless, like, he assigns Change Leader the greatest value he can possibly assign.
Yeah. Weird.
I can see why Damar's drinking. Could you imagine working with this guy?
The texture of Kanar, as was pointed out by our buddy Wes, who made our bottle of custom Kanar over here, is like really thick and viscous. So it's not just that he's like drinking on the job all the time. It's that he's drinking something like really thick on the job.
Yeah.
Like, what if you had a coworker that just walked around with a jar of raspberry preserves and just like took spoonfuls of it to the dome from time to time? Like, it would be disgusting.
It has to be good.
You're talking about Jelly Dan, the guy I used to work with. He was very popular around the office, Ben.
Jelly Dan, Jelly Dan, chug, 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 chug.
That was the thing about Jelly Dan. He'd never chug it out of the jar. He'd have one of those tiny spoons. And he'd take it to the dome very slowly.
That would be foolish.
Poor Damar. He's so put upon. He's having to work while cold. Change Leader could just put on a sweater. Or actually, no, she wants it cold, right? She wants it cold.
Yeah, she's the one that wants it. Yeah, he could put on a sweater, Adam.
I don't know. It's his planet. Why should he have to change?
I guess that's a good point.
Gul Dukat. Dukat. Gul Dukat. So,
on the station, Ezri has the skeleton key code to anyone's condo because she's able to get into Worf's quarters. And yeah. As soon as she enters, we get an audio clip show playing, and they include Terry Farrell's dialogue.
Yeah, wild to hear Terry Farrell in these scenes.
Worf, we may never see each other again, but before you leave, I want you to know that
I remember Rick Berman telling me to be more like Yoda, and then having me come up another week and tell me I need to be more like Grace Kelly.
It's almost like a low rent profit experience kind of feeling. That's happening here because she's just kind of like walking around Worf's quarters looking at his batlets and various you know, like their wedding photo and stuff, and re-experiencing all of these memories of the love between Jadzia and Worf. And I mean, I thought it was pretty effective. But like, I feel like if I was the showrunner of this show and this section of the script landed on my desk, I'd be like, yikes, what if this doesn't work? Like, this is a high degree of difficulty to make this scene not super clunky.
What if Ezri found just the double piped fleshlight on the end table there?
I mean, double barreled.
You shouldn't just walk into a single warrior's apartment.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Do you think that if she turned on a black light, there'd be like two different colors of splatter all over the place?
Yep. I do.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy.
Well, here's the thing, like if you're just looking at it as pages, you could just do this scene without the audio clip show, and it probably plays largely the same. I think it's up to you whether or not you use the audio, and if the audio doesn't work, maybe you just pull it.
Yeah, you just cut it from the episode.
And you just have her linger in the room, and I think the viewer mm-hmm. fills in those places.
It seemed to me like it might be the first time we've seen an image of Jadzia since the last season.
Right.
It felt really momentous, like almost like all of the times that we have called out, it would have been interesting to bring Terry Farrell back for this moment. It makes sense to me now that they didn't, because it really lends weight and impact to this scene.
Well, it's great because you can do it in this way, but you don't have to pay her.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, she's just lucky to be there, right?
Right.
Sisko returns to the station with little D and is greeted by Colonel Kira announcing that Ezri has jaked a runabout.
She's gone. She's gone.
It's kind of interesting math, right? Like the Jem'Hadar are a huge threat to the little D, so it has to break off its search. And the second it does, the Jem'Hadar stop being a threat in that part of space enough that you could fly a runabout there without being worried about being immediately killed.
It's a leap. I feel like it's also a leap that a lieutenant has the skeleton keys for all of the rooms on the station and can also jake a runabout whenever. Like, if Sisko can wake Ezri Dax up with the message about stopping the search, why wasn't Colonel Kira on the blower with, like shouldn't they be passing on their way to and from the station? Why yeah. didn't Colonel Kira let Sisko know about this the moment it happened?
It would have been a fun, like, different way to do the scene, like Sisko sitting in the captain's seat and O'Brien going like, Captain, we actually have a runabout on the scope here.
Yeah.
It's flying like almost exactly the opposite direction. Do you want to hail them?
Right, but that is, that's not what happened. She sneaks away.
And she's going to go, she's like taking matters into her own hands of finding Worf. And Ben Sisko's like, yeah, what are you going to do? She's a Dax. Daxes are going to Dax.
I mean, the move here is the everyone else reacts to Sisko's line, because, I mean, Odo's the only one who gives voice to that essential question.
May I ask why you're letting her do this?
Fair amount of vomit continuity with Ezri Dax. She's getting the swallows, piloting this thing around. Really,
yeah.
Trying not to think about dirty ashtrays.
The Badlands look great in this episode. I feel like they've upgraded the graphics on the Badlands quite a bit.
The Badlands look great, but when she cuts the power inside, I thought the float was not one of the best effects that we've seen on the show.
You mean like the way the ship like tumbles through?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed very bouncy in there. It was less arky than I thought I would expect.
Yeah, the computer is protesting this mm-hmm. decision, because what she's determined is that the ship that Worf was in command of jettisoned all of its escape pods, and they found all of the escape pods from the starboard side, but none from the port side. So she's going to kind of try and put her runabout in position as a port escape pod and let the tidal flows of the Badlands push her to where something would go if it were jettisoned.
The idea is a lot of fun, but is this the first canonical reference to the idea of a Klingon escape pod? I just don't get the sense that this would be a thing ever. Like, everything we know about Klingons is about dying in battle, dying with honor. Like, in what circumstance would you use an escape pod where, like, I guess if there were an engineering problem, you'd want to leave the ship, and I suppose you'd preserve your honor in so doing.
Yeah.
But I've wondered a lot about this.
I read that there was a deleted scene, and Worf is in his ready room while the Jem'Hadar bear down on his ship, and he has a like a quote of the day calendar kind of thing on his desk, and he checks it, and it says it's actually not a good day to die. So he orders them to abandon ship.
That's great. I understand why we can't see any of this, but...
But check in the Max Fun Store for our Is It a Good Day to Die? Question mark calendar for 2021. That'll be out soon.
Every day is that same question.
With any luck, the currents will take us to the same place they took Worf.
In Ops, they try and call Ezri, and she does, like... one of the most fucked out TV tropes of all time of trying to pretend that the call is breaking up by simulating static with her mouth. Like, one step less dorky than crumpling a piece of paper next to the phone, I feel like.
Inside the runabout, it doesn't sound like this is working, but when they cut to Ops, I was very proud of Ezri's work here.
Her performance was good.
Yeah, I thought it was incredibly staticky.
I know.
But like, come on, for three different lifetimes you've known Sisko, you know whether or not this is going to work.
And I wonder about the line you have to walk if you're her and you're Sisko, where you don't want to step over it into the space of showing him up. Like, you don't want to embarrass him in this
or
moment.
Like insult him, you know?
Right. Like, I think there's a performance aspect to this that I think you could easily get wrong, that they don't.
Yeah.
Avery Brooks does not come off as embarrassed or angered by this in a way that could be a really bad look publicly at Ops.
Right. But it puts him in an awkward position, so.
Right.
He seems to be so upset by this that he runs back to his quarters and works on his model of the story of the 47 Ronin.
I mean, to me, science fiction is having a hobby that can live in the living room. You know, like, there's just no fucking way that this is happening, Ben Sisko.
Yeah. Is he shacked up with Cassidy?
Sure.
Or does she have her own quarters?
You don't get the Cassidy enters the scene from frame left wearing a robe, brushing her teeth. Like, she's always just kind of there, already put together in a way that I think makes your question legitimate. I don't think we know for sure.
I also feel like they are an older couple. So when you're 25 and trying to find somebody to spend your life with, I feel like having a model train set that takes up your entire two-car garage means something really different than when you're 48 or whatever Sisko is supposed to be.
Right, but the model train in the garage is grandfathered in. This is a new hobby that has begun mid-relationship, and I think the stakes are very different when that happens.
Dollhouse was not in his Tinder profile.
No.
This is the house he plans to build in his new land that he owns, and in his kind of reverie, looking at this and talking to Cassidy about how excited he is about it, he says he wants her to move there with him.
Do you mean it?
It's like, hey, I've planned my whole future out. You didn't get to talk to me about any of the parts and whether they're cool with you. But now it's a yes or no. Marry me or...
He produces two dolls of them to put into the dollhouse. And like the Ben Sisko doll is super jacked. And like Herculean looking. And for some reason, Cassidy Yates is stacked in a cartoonish kind of way.
Yeah, they both are the kind of toys that give kids an unrealistic expectation of what their bodies will look like when they grow up.
Yeah.
And he makes the dolls kiss, and Cassidy thinks that's cute, so she says she'll marry him.
Right.
Knock on my door! Knock next time! Yes, sir!
I feel like there are a number of scenes like this, Ben, where you could easily fuck it up and make it ham and cheese or unbelievable or whatever, but I think it's the strength of the performance that rises above what could be a really awkward moment in a scene that makes it feel real.
There's a lot of shows that with this exact same dialogue would have seemed so bad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The emotional connection between Avery Brooks and Penny Johnson is so palpable that it works.
I think part of it is framing too. Like I think of the quality of the late 90s, early 2000s sitcom where the will they, won't they pair off is like ever present. And like the tension of the frame of two people in it that are separate, like it looks a kind of way that this doesn't, because Cassidy and Ben Sisko are framed so close, so together,
yeah,
in all of these compositions that there is never the awkward hands around each other's waist performative affection that I think you get in so many other shows. That's why scenes like this feel so real and lived in. It's,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a chance to be awkward where you see where hands go and stuff, but you don't get that here because stuff is cropped the way it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if he's getting handsy, we don't know anything about it.
No.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Mind, what are you doing now?
Esri convinces the computer to fly blind through this nebula, and she makes it through an eddy of plasma fire and comes across the escape pod that Worf is in, and is able to beam him aboard.
Unintentionally funny part is like seeing his escape pod just sort of like bouncing through the curtain. I love that the escape pod has no windows.
Yeah.
I love how it's basically just a coffin.
Yeah.
They don't do a great job with the scale, but by beaming him aboard, kind of seated, sitting up, I sort of understood it as he's kind of folded inside this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't have a lot of room to move around. It was like a KFC chicken coop in there.
Right. He doesn't necessarily look happy to see her.
You are alone.
No, he doesn't look particularly happy to be rescued. I mean, he's just kind of dazed, I guess.
Weren't you expecting, like, because this is so Worf. This is Worf for years. Worf wants to die. Why won't anyone let him die? I expected that to be part of this story.
Right. Like, yeah, no mention is made of, like, even just her asking, like, what made you run to an escape pod would have been an interesting question to hear him answer, because the word is he was the last person on the ship, right? Like, he told his crew to abandon ship and he stayed on the bridge.
Yeah. They have other things to talk about, though.
Yeah. He's pretty stunned when she tells him that she came without anyone's permission. It kind of comes across as a grand romantic gesture, and it almost doesn't compute for him.
What didn't compute for me was Worf's loaf not quite meeting the top of his nose. Did you get this? Like, the way they shot him when he sits down at the controls, I feel like the loaf wasn't glued into his face all the way, and there seemed to be a little bit of a flap.
Oh, really?
Like, what's the area where your eyebrows meet the top of your nose? Is that the penumbra? Like, that's... I feel like they needed a little more glue in there.
Yeah, I have neutral skin with an oily penumbra, they say.
Yeah, I use a tea tree oil pad to clear up the acne in my T-zone and penumbra.
It works.
And Cardassia, Change Leader, has had some new communications equipment installed in her quarters.
Alexa, call home.
This is kind of like special red phone shit, because it's not tied into the rest of the Cardassian communications network. Very hush-hush stuff going on here that Damar is not super excited about, but she is, and she's talking to Wei Yun. He tells her that the vaccine for the disease that has affected the Great Length, that's making her all flaky, is not going well. And the solution she suggests is kill all the doctors that are working on it and, like, spin up their clones and like, see if that motivates them to figure this thing out.
It's pretty rugged to put Wei Yun in charge of this project as a replacement himself, you know?
Mm-hmm. a replacement of a replacement of a replacement, I think.
Yeah. I think if you're a, change leader, you got to be happy that you weren't issued a mechanical keyboard, because that's just going to fill up with skin flakes big time if you're her. Yeah,
you have to get one of those little miniature vacuums and clean it out all the time.
It's real gross. This scene includes a really fun performance, and that is Jeffrey Combs' ability to combine fear and compassion in the same moment. Because he clearly fears change leader, but he also sees that she's suffering and wants to alleviate that in some way. I think it's a gear that we haven't seen on this show from him, and it's an unsurprising sixth gear.
Right.
It's just another great combination by Jeffrey Combs that seems incredibly difficult that he makes look easy.
They know nothing.
That moment when he gives her the sample jar and asks her to put a gold member flake of skin into it.
Uh-huh.
His reaction is like disgust and awe and fear and compassion all mixed together.
Right.
It's really, really incredible.
Every time I take off my shirt at a public pool, that's kind of the reaction I get too.
Yeah.
You can't get engaged without telling, for some reason, Jake. And that is what we get back on the station. Ben Sisko and Jake Sisko, very happy with the circumstance. Best man duties have been given to, for some reason, Jake. A Jake Sisko who is especially excited for the bachelor party duties. Ben, there is never a moment in the entire episode where either of them talk about Jake's mother, say her name, or refer to her somehow. And even, like, because Jake's talking about how great Cassidy is in a way that seems like a very natural context in which to go, you know, like, after Mom died, I just never thought there'd be a person as great as her for you, but I really think that Cassidy is great.
Cassidy is, like, right up there. I mean, she's, like, 7/8 as good as Mom.
So, you approve?
Dad, she's like a 10.
The grief aspect of their character, the grief that binds them, I don't know if it's been referred to in many seasons, even.
Is Jake 1/4 prophet if Sisko is 1/2 prophet?
That's a great question.
Like, I feel like that's also a question that I would like them to be digging into a little bit more. Like, what happens when Jake goes and has an orb experience?
Did, for some reason, Jake and Kira ever post-game the whole Pa-Wraith fight they had on the promenade? Just, like, chop it up afterward? Boy, that was pretty crazy, huh?
That was some wild shit.
Yeah,
like Miles and Bashir refighting the Alamo constantly in the holosuites.
Right.
Jake and Kira have a weekly Pa-Wraith showdown in the holosuites.
They're hooked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back on the runabout, I guess they're heading home. A successful pickup mission has taken place. The problem is there's a lot of time on this road trip yet to play out, and Ezri keeps putting feet into her mouth, one after the other, after the other. She's chain-smoking feet.
This episode is guest-directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
She's talking to Worf at one point about, like, what he was doing to pass the time in the pod, and they talk about how singing in the escape pod is a little bit like singing in the shower, kind of trick you into thinking you're a better vocalist than you actually are.
Uh-huh.
So Worf was trying stuff outside of his own singing range.
The acoustics were favorable.
I guess if you're in a pod without a window, what else can you do? Oh, yeah. I know what else you can do. Never mind that.
If you turn a black light on in that pod, it's all different colors going on in there.
It's a good thing Ezri didn't tractor the entire pod into the runabout. You leave the pod behind.
Yeah. She actually let go the entire load of torpedoes she had on board. which is why they get in so much trouble when the ticks find them.
Right. Yeah, two ticks incoming, and one runabout isn't a good match for that. They end up getting bangers dropped on them big time, and they have to bail out into a planet.
Yeah. I liked the emergency escape of a runabout. That was cool.
Yeah.
They go for the backpacks. Worf grabs the guns. Ezri, very bad mistake, forgets to get the communications device.
What?
And they beam down to the planet's surface, and we cut to the wide shot of the runabout up in space.
My God, Ezri, what have we done? Ezri's like,
what you do every time, Worf?
What Jadzia remembers you doing every time. Oh, I mean, I always do that.
We became vegetarians. I mean, what am I saying? Yeah. We're dancers. No, we're murderers. Ah.
Yeah, so the Ticks conduct a series of orbital bombardments, totally destroying their position from the safety of space. And final season, first chapter of the finale of Deep Space Nine, Worf and Ezri Dax. RSVP.
It really sets a tone. Ezri's going to be on the hook for a big bill when she gets back.
Yeah.
You stole a runabout and got it destroyed? Cool. Please at least tell me you saved the communications array. No, you didn't? Great. Well, we're going to add that to the bill.
Why isn't the communications array inside the JanSport Go backpack that they got out of the floorboards? That should be
in
there.
That's where you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got one of those like hand crank radios you get for supporting a public radio pledge drive in our go bag.
Yeah, we got those too. You could have a small bag packed, Ben. Yeah. That's the rule.
And I just think it's fun that it's a radio and a flashlight.
I know who's going to be the cranker in your household when the time comes. Ben, why is it that you can crank the radio for just hours and hours while I get tired after 15 minutes?
And when your right arm gets tired, your left arm just picks up where it left off? How does one achieve strength of that kind? The ability to do a rhythmic action over and over and over again. Then I go, I don't know, maybe it's Maybelline.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Replimat is getting a lot of use as a location this episode. That's where Sisko and Cassidy are disgusting. They're disgusting. They're disturbing wedding logistics, Ben. What's disgusting is that Quark is probably going to be the caterer, and they're going to have it in the wardroom.
Yeah, this is like...
It's the least romantic room on the station, right?
They're talking about a very small, like, go down to City Hall and then have a party for our friends kind of ceremony. And doing it in a way where it's like a party for your friends at, like, the lunchroom at work? It seems like the worst way to do it.
They put a curtain over the Jem'Hadar War Memorial before the before the thing, right?
I hope so, yeah. That's where the step and repeat is.
Yeah, so they're bouncing around all these ideas when a little Bajoran girl walks up and asks to be a flower girl or something. One of the 51 that Cassidy Yates gets to choose, and it's in this moment where it dawns on them that you do not get to have a smallish, intimate wedding when you are the Sisko.
That just leaves the menu.
Yeah, the people of Bajor are very excited about this, and it's just not going to be possible for him to have a discreet private ceremony now that the word is out.
You know who else they never mention in this episode besides Jennifer Sisko? Is Dad.
Yeah.
Is he not going to come to this thing?
I must protest.
If they just had a tossed off line of Ben going, after Dad died of heat stroke in that desert planet... it's so sad to me that he won't be able to see me get remarried, but I guess it is what it is.
You know, I always add like an eighth of a teaspoon of his cremains to the roux in his honor. So the Bajorans are psyched for what is going to be the wedding of the century, and it would appear as though the Sisko is going to allow it. Like, he's been redirected into this thing by this little girl and the growing crowd around them. This is like eating at the Ivy, right? If we're going to use like a local reference. Like when you're the Cisco, you can't eat in public like this.
Right. The sunglasses and ball cap are not disguising him sufficiently.
No.
I have the feeling we're forgetting something.
We get a very late in the episode reveal that this is also a Ducat episode at this point in the show. 12 minutes left in the episode and Ducat shows up. I was pretty surprised by that.
I liked it. I liked the late reveal. I like that Damar is always with a girl at the wrong time. He's just trying to get his spoon wet. It's not happening. Enter Ducat.
Yeah. And he's like, let me smell your spoon.
I'm afraid you have an exaggerated sense of my importance.
He's there because he needs a friend for a non-specific reason. And Damar, I guess, is okay with this. He's open to the idea.
Some reference made to the fact that Ducat maybe is not a popular dude with Change Leader and Wei Yun at the moment.
Right.
But yeah, like he just seems to have kind of some power over Damar. Like he comes in and he kind of drags Damar too. Like, right. Oh, like you're still a real Wei Yun toady. Anyways, I need your help. And Damar's like, sure, can I get you a drink?
Damar's comeuppance is going to be exhilarating, right?
Yeah, he's going to fall into a vat of canar.
Right. But it'll be like the end of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. On the planet, it's been 6 days. And we only know that because they've said it. Nothing about the costuming or the hair choice really gives this away, especially Ezri's hair. I think you got to tussle that hair if it's 6 days.
Is it 6 days on the planet or 6 days since Worf went missing? Because they're having that argument about the field rations.
That was the math that I put together, was that he's tired of eating the field rations for 6 days. I thought the rations came from the Jansport bag. I didn't think he had any rations on the escape pod.
I think he's saying, like, I started with field rations a lot earlier than you.
Mm.
I don't know.
You know what makes a ton of sense is Worf just being bored. He sharpens a stick and goes hunting. What else is he going to do?
Yeah, Ezri is not cool about this. She's grossed out by the fact that he killed something. She doesn't want to help him eat it. And this just sets off, like, a string of arguments that don't have anything to do with this.
Ezri's like, you still hungry? Feast on this.
There's some Worfs in this house. There's some Worfs in this house. There's some Worfs in this house.
I hate this. Fight into kiss is so lazy.
Yeah.
I think lazy might be too mean. I think what I mean by that is I don't want this. Do you want this? I don't think anyone wants this. This is too clean is the problem.
And I think that, like, you know, Worf has always been a character that has some values that are retrograde comparative to other Federation people. But, like, don't call Ezri a Sleabach, Worf. Come on. Give me a fucking break. She's a 450-year-old woman. She's allowed to have a past.
Worf isn't very likable. And that's part of the reason why I don't want them to get together. I think death has consequences, and maybe the biggest consequence is that person is dead. Like, I don't like the idea of rekindling something which is over.
Yeah, but it's not as over as it may have once seemed.
Yeah.
Although maybe this is just a strategy, right? Maybe they were both really pent up after the whole rescue situation. They were having a tough time getting to sleep because the next scene is them passed out in their sleeping bags and Worf waking up to see a couple of Breens stun them. And get thrown in Breen jail.
Yeah, you gotta believe that Breen jail is pretty cold, right? Probably a place that Change Leader would enjoy, TBH.
Yeah, why don't the Breen team up with the Founders? That's a match made in cold room heaven.
Seems like a natural fit, just like Worf v. Doors, which he gets another crack at here. You know he's not going to do anything against that door. Safest door in the fleet is the door next to Worf.
Yeah. We do get to see the ship that they're on. Pretty intense cruiser here.
I like it. I like the looks of this thing. And I like how it sounds when it spools up and leaves orbit.
So just a couple moments left in the episode. One on Cardassia, where DeMar gets called back to his quarters and finds a bajorified Ducat.
That surgeon you recommended does excellent work.
A face carved in marble.
What do you think?
That was the favor that he wanted from DeMar, is put me in touch with a really good plastic surgeon.
The makeover looks pretty successful. I mean, he looks a little like Mark Alamo here, but not a bad-looking guy.
Yeah. DeMar is kind of flabbergasted to learn that Ducat is a true believer in Pa-Wraith theology.
Yeah. What do you think he's going to do? Looking all Bajoran.
I don't know. Sneak onto Bajor and try and bid on the construction project that's starting up at Cisco's.
He's going to move right next to Cisco. Real tone shift.
Yeah. I missed that moment at the beginning when Cisco said that he had just acquired some land in the Del Boca Vista province.
Right.
There's nothing available in that development.
Ducat's like, no one tells me where I can move. I think the thing that makes you write about the 6-day span of time is the idea that Dax and Worf are missing. There's no way there would be 6 days passed without hearing from Ezri Dax before Sisko does something, right?
Yeah.
So there would have to be a shorter length of time before Sisko was aware of her going missing. And this is something that he's told while modeling. Like, I guess there's more time for me to work on my models.
I'll keep putting this Lego Millennium Falcon together.
Yeah.
Anyways. And then he gets a profit experience seemingly from the model, and this is Prophet Sarah, his sort of mother.
I shared her existence.
Kind of pulling like an overprotective mother move, like she's no good for you. Like, I want you to marry somebody that, you know, that believes in the prophets, not somebody that, you know, wants a minister to perform their wedding.
I bet Ben Sisko is happy that this moment occurs here instead of during the "if anyone has any reason why these two should not be wed, speak now" moment of the ceremony.
Ben Sisko like just goes into a trance in front of everyone.
That would have been very awkward.
You don't care how I feel.
Is Kai Wynn gonna have to be the officiant for their wedding because she's the religious figure that is a big enough deal?
God, that sucks that he's obligated to have that be the case if true, right?
Yeah. Like, you can't have Admiral Beltbuckle do it if it's going to be a huge planetary event for Bajor.
Yeah, he doesn't seem up to this kind of task.
Yeah. She does not want him to marry Cassidy, and him kind of pushing back on this, saying, I should be free to make my own decisions. You know, they kind of have an agree to disagree moment here.
That's the way the episode ends, is him saying no.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I want.
Coming out of the experience with a look of horror on his face, and we cut to black.
I mean, is it too late to sell the property on Bajor? I don't know if I would want to live on Bajor if it meant having constant profit visions where the prophets were all up in my business about every decision I made.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's either Del Boca Vista or back in the city where people could just pop in at any time. So it's always a nightmare one way or the other.
Sure is.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
You really want to do this here, now, okay, let's do it,
I mean, I think I like it more considering that it's the first chapter in many chapters to come. I think it's a good kickoff to the conclusion. Kind of a lot happens here. The element that I cannot get with is the hookup between Ezri and Worf. I hope that was a one-time thing that they don't do ever again, just to get it out of their system.
Yeah, and then it's like awkward at the water cooler after that, but
yeah, it's just too neat to do it like that, and that's the element I that didn't agree with me. But I thought the rest of the ep was pretty solid.
I did too. It's a very unusual ep because it doesn't really feel like there's that much stakes. Like, it's a bunch of like small stakes vignettes that link together and are setting the table for a bigger story. But like, Worf is rescued halfway through.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, like, after that happens, you're not like wondering if everyone is going to live through this or not, you know.
I was reading about what a specific challenge it was to construct a story that lasted 9 or 10 episodes, like for a writer's room and a creative team to come up with a story and then be able to divide it neatly the way mm-hmm. that they had to, especially for a creative team that isn't used to that kind of challenge. Like, no one had ever done this before.
Yeah, they, like, writing teams now have tons of reps of breaking an entire season as a single thing, but this is kind of like the outset of one of the most ambitious story arcs in television history to date.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see how it goes, Adam. Why don't we check on our Priority One inbox in the meantime, see how that goes.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Steph P. Friendly Fire doesn't have P1s. And the message is to Mom. Unless it's Morn, I'm squinting. It looks like Mom.
That's Mom.
All right. Message goes like this. Mom, it's your B-Day, a.k.a. Pearl Harbor Day. Remember that time I bought you Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor for a birthday present? Yeah, me too. And I'm sorry. Hope this P1 is a 5-whatever Adams custom rating system this week. You know what's interesting about this message is my mom was also born on Pearl Harbor Day.
Wow. Is this Steph Pranica?
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to ask Danny some follow-up questions about this P1. I hope, yeah. I mean, the P1, definitely a 5 surprise secret sisters. and I hope that Steph's mom has a 5 reunified siblings type of birthday.
Happy birthday, Mom. Our next Priority One message is from David and Miriam, and it's to Ben and Adam. And it goes like this. Thanks for making Monday night kitchen cleanup hour less miserable. One of our faves was when you replayed, "It's a fake!
It's a fake!"
10 times. That guy was both scary and hilarious. He'll scare us. Hey, Senator Vrenak, what's that you're baking? It's a cake! What's that slithering on the grass? It's a snake! Love the show. Maybe less pee jokes? Nope, sorry.
Yeah.
We'll stop making them when we stop thinking they're funny, which is never.
Yeah. Monday night kitchen cleanup. What are you guys doing on Monday?
Do you think that David and Miriam, like, don't clean their kitchen all week and then just get it all done on Monday?
The idea that anyone would do it that way really blows my mind. I know you saw the look on my face.
The look on your face was amazing. Like, you are really going through the ramifications of not having to clean your kitchen tonight.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Here's what I do. I clean my kitchen after dinner, like before going to bed. And then I clean it again in the morning when I wake up.
Wow. That seems like twice as much cleaning as you need to be doing there, buddy.
I'm cleaning it up all the time. I can't stand a kitchen, like one of my kitchens anyway, that's untidy, that's not ready to go. I want to get in there and get going when I make a thing. I don't want to be fiddling around.
My kitchen is so tiny, and if it is even a tiny bit out of place, it basically feels unusable, so I'm kind of right there with you. Like, it has to really be thoroughly cleaned after every use.
You got a galley kitchen so tiny, you could call it a gallow.
Yeah, that's the kind of gallows humor that David and Miriam really tune in for.
See, there wasn't a piss joke there.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to support our various kinds of jokes, You can send us a P1 or send somebody else a P1.
Yeah, they don't have to all be for us.
Yeah. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where it's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate everyone who does so.
Sure do.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I tell you what, anytime you jake a shuttle, it's going to make you the Shimoda in my book. I think this is... that's an easy choice for me.
My Shimoda is the same as yours, but for a different reason. It's Ezri, and it's for that forgetting... I mean, I guess it's really both her and Worf. Like, don't assume that somebody's getting the communications relay when you're bailing out of your crashing ship. Like, you got to go talk through the checklist, right? Like, that's what pilots do before they take off. Like, they go down the checklist.
Great comparison.
They, like two people have to confirm that everything is as it should be. And we see this all the time in Deep Space Nine. Every time a runabout bails out, there's some critical piece of equipment that didn't get brought with. And you know, you'd think that they would learn their lesson after a little while, but Worf and Ezri are prisoners to the Breen.
Kind of a high runabout body count on DS9. Yeah. Where are we at?
Yeah,
now?
They're really getting down into some third string rivers with these runabout names.
Yeah. Pretty soon we're going to get the runabout Los Angeles River.
It's just a mostly dry runabout.
Right.
Gotta get that cold press action.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... Oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Gotta get that gold. Press Platinum. Get that Gold Press Platinum. Platinum. Gold Press Platinum. That's a lot of Yamak songs.
Well, pretty soon we'll be getting one of those, but for right now, we need to figure out what episode we're watching next in our 10-part series finale, and in what way we're going to do that, right? For that, we got to go over to the Game of Buttholes, Duel of the Prophets.
We do, and while you're doing that, I will tell you that the next episode is Season 7, Episode 18, Till Death Do Us Part. As Sisko agonizes over his broken engagement. Oh no! Spoiler what? Alert! Dukat's latest evil plan is revealed.
Why do you think the engagement's broken off? Do you think Cassidy just doesn't want a big wedding?
He bowed to the pressure that his godmom put on him.
Yeah.
And when your mom is a god, I mean, you could be forgiven.
Yeah.
Those overbearing parents, Adam, they fuck things up all the time.
My godmom wasn't okay with me marrying a convicted felon. All right, Ben. Well, we are on square 57 on the game board, where the only thing that puts us in any danger is a space butthole 5 squares ahead. So I hope we don't hit that.
That's the longest space butthole we've got, I think.
I know.
That would take us all the way back to square 18.
Yeah, that would destroy us.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm gonna avoid it. I'm calling my shot. We're not hitting it.
you're the great Bambino pointing your bat at a square other than the butthole.
You know what I roll, Ben. I rolled a 1.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Square 58 is where we are. I'm leaving the possibility of us hitting that space butthole up to you on the next episode.
Well, I'm looking forward to that episode, Adam, but it will be a regular ass episode. And in the meantime, we got a couple of bits of business to take care of. Once again, please listen to my appearance on After These Messages, talking about Star Trek themed television commercials. Some really funny ones. There's a great Deep Space Nine commercial that we talk about that is like, you cannot believe it's a Deep Space Nine commercial. There's one where they have the entire cast of the original series recast as like lookalike actors, and they're like ordering from Pizza Hut or something.
Oh yeah. Do you have any more pizzones? I'm making better choices. I'm choosing to eat my feelings.
And they got the original cast to do the voices, and then like cast younger people to play the characters, and they found some audio. So you remember that episode of TNG where the guy like commits suicide in the warp nacelle, and there's like some like psychological residue that's haunting them.
It's my favorite. Whatever.
The guy that played the character that committed suicide was also Sulu in that commercial. And he's on like Bosch now. Like he's a pretty successful actor. They found some audio of him talking about what it was like to do that commercial, and it's pretty funny.
Wow.
So, go give that a listen.
Thanks to everyone who makes Greatest Generation possible. Of course, by saying that, talking about Adam Agusia.
Who
makes the great music for this show based on the strong, strong work by Dark Materia. Who started it all for us, really.
Indeed. Got to thank our buddy Bill Tilly, who runs all of our social media accounts, at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter. He's doing great work, and you're going to want to follow those accounts because, we occasionally will go live or tweet announcements out and stuff. It's a fun follow and worth doing.
Greatest Gen... Greatest Discovery Friendly Fire. We're a small business, so in December, support the small businesses that you love. You can support the shows by going to MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah, you can actually gift memberships at MaximumFun.org/join now, so consider making a holiday present of a year of Greatest Generation support.
You don't always have to spend money to support the show, though. A couple of free ways you can do it. Leave us a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice. Or if you're using Overcast, I think it's just one star. You just hit the star in Overcast.
Yeah.
That does it.
That is, that's easy peasy lemon squeezy right there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, recommending and giving nice ratings to the show really helps us out. So thanks to everyone who does that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, gang. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. Just thinking about calling the whole thing off.
I say Bajor, you say Bajor.
I just don't think this is going to work out. I mean, we shouldn't be fighting this much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's early.
I mean, if it's like this now, what's it going to be like later?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, would it kill you to get a hobby? I'm here building houses on our coffee table, talking to prophets. Why don't you do something?
Yeah, like maybe find places where there's blood in the streets so that you can invest in land or something like that. Like, that seems like a pretty good hobby.
I just don't feel like I even know you. I don't know what your hobbies are. That's a bad sign, yeah. Right?
What are you interested in, even?
I mean, besides me, all right? Because I can't be the only thing for you, all right?
I can't even be the only thing to myself, man.
Gestures towards the model house on the table, just kicks it over the side until it breaks.
Like a cat pushing a coffee cup off the edge of a table.
Yeah. You broke your little house.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.